it's time to meet up and catch up at the Weekend Water Cooler. Now, here's your host, Gene Bolduc.
Welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler. It's the end of the year, and we know it. And joining us to mark the end of the year throughout the month of December is Dr. Aaron Keck.
Hello.
Thanks for coming in
Thanks
to the Water
me.
Cooler and hanging with us in the coolest place in town. Always, you know, 1 degree less cool than Carrboro, I'm told.
Yeah. I'm not a super big fan of being in the coolest place in town because we're getting on into December and we're just about to hit the cold snap here
as
we're pre-recording this.
You know, as we're recording this, we're watching the weather. They're talking about snow developing in Louisiana over the next couple of days.
Snow in December.
You know, a 1 degree cooler could make the difference between you arriving in your driveway versus the ditch in front of your driveway.
Yes, yes.
Have you ever had that happen, by the way, when you're driving, hitting black ice? Have you ever had that experience? You know, we both grew up north.
You know, I really haven't had that. Like, I've had that experience of driving on a road and hitting the brakes and
having them go.
not today, little man.
Yeah, it's not going to be braking.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not breaking news.
But fortunately,
you see what I did there?
All right,
it's
I'm
good.
Going. But
it's early in the show. You better be ready.
It's all downhill from here, folks, which is bad because the brakes might fail.
No brakes.
Yeah, I remember in the one time getting stuck in a ditch was in high school. We were going to
that's mandatory, right?
I wasn't driving. My teacher was. We were going to a forensics tournament, so oral interpretation. Theater public speaking event,
right.
And we were all piled in my teacher Mrs. Fallion's minivan, and we were going to Matawana High School, which is this dinky little town in Michigan just outside of Battle Creek in Kalamazoo. And Matawana is a very, very small town. It's one of those. It's an intersection. It's a stoplight, and that's it. City Hall is right next to a bar. The bar is larger than City Hall and probably more well-trafficked, and that's basically the extent of downtown. So, of course, we get lost.
You got lost in that town.
We missed the one turn. We had to turn right, and we didn't realize it, and we went straight
and
instead.
And there's only one right.
Yeah. And there's only one right? So we're going all the way down this road, and I'm telling myself I'm never going straight again, which is the origin of all my woes.
Okay. A lot of things
are
cleared
up already. Hey, I said it was all downhill
already.
From here.
Right.
So we finally get to a turn, and we're like, okay, let's turn around, and we pull into this guy's driveway. It's like farmhouse with a big field behind it. And we pull into this driveway, and we have to back up, but it's a big minivan. It's been snowing. This guy hasn't come out to shovel or plow his driveway, so we get stuck in the driveway, and Mrs. Fallion is spinning the wheels, and we're getting further and further into the rut. And this guy is just. We were talking before the show started that I just finished reading It by Stephen King.
Yes.
And one of the running recurring motifs is that whenever horrible things are happening in this town, the townspeople just kind of look at it without reacting and then just sort of casually get up and walk away and do nothing. And it's because it has infested the entire town with its sort of malevolent evil, so people will see horrible things happen and they'll do nothing. This guy stood in his living room, this big picture window in this well-lit house in January in the morning, clearly just standing there sipping on a coffee cup with his other arm folded over his chest, watching these kids and their teacher struggle to get out of the driveway. We finally did, and we made it to Matawan High School. And then the story goes on from there, but I'll stop because we've got other things to talk about.
Well, you know, I will tell you, you grew up in Michigan. I grew up in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And when you learn how to drive,
you learn how to drive
in the snow.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Honestly, there is no negotiating ice. And we know, as experienced Yankees, we know this. And I really do think that Chapel Hill has kind of got this pretty well figured out, you know, that there's, you know, you can do some stuff with snow. You can pretty much travel in snow, even, you know, year-round tires and whatnot.
Right.
You can manage okay with snow, but you don't negotiate
ice
with ice.
Ice is bad, yeah.
Ice is a terrorist. You just don't negotiate.
I'm worried about the next time we get an ice storm because I didn't just move into a house, but in January I moved into a new house with Brad. And it's located basically at the bottom of a hill Durham.
Oh,
and we had had ice storms right before I moved in, but after I moved in from mid-January on, we didn't have any more ice storms.
Right.
We had a water crisis, but we didn't have any more ice storms.
Right.
So I honestly don't know yet
how this is going to go.
If the next time we get an ice storm, I'm actually going to be able to get out of Shadyside Lane and make it to make it to the station.
Oh, you've buried.
We're going to see.
You have buried the lead on this because let me tell you what you need to do is be ready for your hot chocolate stand out in your driveway because everybody else is going to end up there.
That's true. Well, when they had the ice storm last time, Brad was saying, a lot of cars on Shadyside Lane just tried to get up the hill and couldn't.
Yeah, you know, the viral videos that you could make could really be something if everybody's eventually going to end up
at the bottom of the hill.
Yeah,
here
there
we go.
Saying, you know, come to Brad and Aaron's because you're going to end up here eventually. Everybody ends up here eventually.
Yeah.
Well, my story is that I had plenty of experience driving in snow as a teenager, learning how to drive, and as a young adult in New England, driving and so forth. Lived in North Carolina since 1978. Have had plenty of experience driving in various conditions here.
Yes.
But a few years ago, but I never, ever had the black ice experience. And a few years ago, I was working in Durham, live in Chapel Hill. I got up in the morning. You know, the streets generally were clear. And I started on my way to work. And I was in a curve. I don't know if you know where the Zen Center is in the very north side of Chapel Hill on 86.
On 86, yeah.
On the right near Camp New Hope, before Camp New Hope. But there's a pretty substantial curve in the road there, and I live right near there. And I was starting out, had my coffee in my hand, and I've got the radio on.
Singing along with the radio,
And the road is dry. The road is dry.
Oh, yeah.
But around that curve is shaded, and it wasn't dry yet.
Yep.
And, you know, it looked a little wet, but, you know, nothing you'd even notice or care about. And I'm driving a front-wheel drive car, and the next thing I know, I'm sideways on the road at about 45 miles an hour.
Ugh.
And, you know, I'm doing my steer into the skid and all that. I went off the road, up onto an embankment, and then down again off of that in front of a speed limit sign and came to rest. I had cars coming right toward me, too.
Ugh.
And, I mean, I can only
imagine.
You can't
do anything about that.
I was able to steer the car off the road,
which
was a good thing.
Yeah.
My car was undamaged, which is astonishing, honestly. I did not hit the speed limit sign, although the next time you drive by there, you realize that I went around that curve and the rear end of my car just kept curving.
Yes.
And kept going with that. And I steered up the embankment around the speed limit sign, came to a stop. The people who were coming toward me had to be freaking out. They had to be freaking out, just watching this car just totally fishtail.
Yeah.
So, boy, did they slow down.
Yeah, which is good.
And by the time I backed up and got back on the road and got my heart back down to some heart rate under 100, you know, the conditions had changed.
Right.
But I've absolutely never had that happen before or since, thankfully. And just tell everybody, you know, when the weather's going to be on the way, you really need to take it seriously about black ice.
And the lesson from that is that as prepared as we may think we are and as much time as we spend trying to anticipate the dangers, the biggest dangers are always lurking in the places that
That's
we don't
right.
expect. And the way we get out of them is if everyone around us is watchful and concerned about taking care of each other.
That's so true. And what a segue.
Yeah.
What a segue into what our program is going to be about today, which is going to be, we're going to take a break.
That's the weekend water cooler.
The water cooler, baby, which you are listening to on 97.9 The Hill, and we appreciate that. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about, or a lot, about all politics being local and about wrapping up, looking back over 2017 and what's happened across the year. So that's right. It's a nine-hour show. And you know, so we're going to give you a bathroom break up front so you can make it all the way through. We're talking with Aaron Keck, our fearless leader here at CHL in the afternoons. And we're going to break it all down. We're going to talk about state and local elections and some of the impact of national events on just how things are going and how people are getting along. And you're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler here on 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Weekend Water Cooler. Gene Bolduc, your host here, and we're talking with Dr. Aaron Keck.
Hello.
About the year and how it's at long last, some may feel, coming to a close.
End. Yes.
We hope it's just to, welcome in the next year, which we optimists like to believe will be a better year.
Come November.
Yeah. Right. Right around maybe
we've
the
got
second
a midterm
week
election
of November.
Coming up. The really interesting thing about the upcoming midterm elections, and I know you wanted to talk about this year politics being local, so let's start by talking about 11 months from now when a national
exactly
election rolls around.
Right. Oh my God.
I was talking with Tom Jensen of Public Policy Polling on the air a couple of weeks ago, and we got to talking about, and we've sort of been talking about this, he will do surveys, the generic ballot for the upcoming midterm elections. If the election were today, would you vote for a Democrat or a Republican, or would you prefer? And Democrats are leading the generic ballot by a really wide margin. Usually Democrats lead it by a little bit, but gerrymandering being what it is and also turnout being what it is, the sort of demographic groups that tend to vote Republican also tend to turn out at higher rates. So even if Democrats lead the generic ballot by a couple of points, election day rolls around, Republicans might end up winning. But in this particular case, Democrats are leading by 7 points, 10 points, 13 points. It ranges in there depending on the week and depending on the survey that you're looking at. But it's a pretty significant lead.
Right.
So we're – and it's a similar lead to what we saw at this time before – the 2010 election for Republicans, and it's a similar lead to what we saw before the 2006 midterm elections for Democrats, which was a big sweep year.
Right.
And I started thinking about this as we were having this conversation, and I thought, man, we've been talking about this upcoming election as a potential wave election for Democrats, like pushing back against what happened in 2016, as this surprise. But honestly, you look back at the last few midterm elections.
Right.
2006, with a Republican in the White House, was a big wave year for Democrats.
Right.
2010 was the next midterm election with a Democrat in the White House. It was a big wave year for Republicans. 2014, same thing. Democrat in the White House, big wave year for Republicans. And I asked, and he said, yeah, probably. Is this the new normal where we are, in fact, so polarized as a country that whoever the occupant of the White House is, the midterm election is going to be a pendulum, a big pendulum swing the other way? Because it's happened the last three times. Like the last midterm election that wasn't a huge pushback was 2002, and that was with a war going on and the drumbeat sounding about a second war, so everything was crazy there.
Yeah, that's an aberration.
1998 was the other one, and that was with Republicans like going way down the impeachment train, which Americans were not as willing to get on.
That's
so
right.
Democrats did not Republicans did not do as well on that as you would think they would have.
90,
and then the previous one was 94, which was another sweep.
In 98, Democrats gained seats in the House.
Yeah.
Which was absolutely a rebuke of how the Republicans were just going after Bill Clinton. And then they did their impeachment during the lame duck.
They did their impeachment during the lame duck, yeah.
Yeah. So I do think that the pendulum,
right.
And I think that that is on the national level the norm. It would be shocking if that didn't happen next year.
Yeah, I mean, and it's also hilarious to look at media coverage of American politics, because after 2008, and if you know something about just sort of the history of American elections, this is fairly predictable. Not necessarily right. the waveness of it, but every midterm election, whoever the president, whatever party the president is, right. the other party, the opposition party, tends to pick up seats right. in the midterms. And that's particularly the case if it's the president's second term. If it's right. the sixth year of the president's term, right. then it does tend to be a wave election with the opposition party picking up a lot of seats. And there's a number of different reasons for that, but that's kind of standard. So it's always really funny to watch the media coverage after a presidential election, like 2008, for instance. Oh, huge year for Republicans. People were writing obituaries for the Republican Party. Oh, that's it. They're dead. It's over.
Now.
And then, like, maybe middle of 2009, and actually on until late 2009, and right. even early 2010, you had actual intelligent journalists and commentators and reporters, people that you would think would have some knowledge of American history, writing pieces saying, you know, I think the Republicans might actually not do too bad in the 2010 midterm elections. I'm reading this and I'm like, of course they're going to win the midterm. They always do. And then the same thing after the 2010 elections, like, oh, well, that's it. The Democrats are done. It's all over. And then the cycle begins anew. You know, actually, I think the Democrats might have a chance in 2012, and then it happens all over again. People were writing the obituaries for the Democratic Party after the 2016 election, and they're still right. writing those obituaries right. in spite of the fact that it was a 50-50 year mm-hmm. in Congress.
And gerrymandering.
The Democrat actually got more votes for president than the Republican did. And
right.
the Democrat was Hillary Clinton, who,
right.
let's be honest, is not the most popular
right.
Democrat in the whole wide world. People were still writing the obituary for the Democrats even then. And now you're starting to see the articles like, you know, actually, I think the Democrats might not lose too many seats in Congress next year. Like, you think?
Brilliant insights. Yeah. Brilliant insights. Yes, because, you know, that's a whole thing that about the national media, especially that's just basically dishonest, is that they are sowing the seeds of trying to get their audience to believe that these things are very much in question and
mm-hmm.
unlikely or surprising, and so you must tune in tomorrow to see
right.
what's going to happen.
And they are in question until the election happens, but like there's a historical trend, right?
Yeah, yeah. There is. There are things that we can predict with some certainty, and one of them is that it's pretty unlikely that that the Republicans are just going to build on their grip on power next
yeah.
year. Just watching them. You know, I think that the political funeral business must be one of the most thriving industries in all of Washington. You know, of all the consultancies and all of this stuff, pronouncing a political party dead is like,
you
know, the leading hobby in all of Washington.
Yeah.
It's such nonsense.
Yeah.
You know, you're dead, but you're not really dead, and, you know, and all this stuff. Unless, of course, you've, you know, had someone accuse you of something and enough people are mad on Twitter about it, in mm-hmm. which case you have to end your career no matter what.
If you're a Democrat, if you're a Republican, you get an additional, you get more
problem.
Money. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a, you know, oh, man.
So there was a little bit of bitterness there, but it's also true. So.
But it has the added benefit of being true. So our bitterness is, our bitterness has a basis. I think that might be a tongue twister if we kept working on it.
Or the slogan for this show, tune into the Weekend Water Cooler, our bitterness has a basis.
We're recording that, so you can just use that to cut some ads
the
show for next year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, join us at 97.9 The Hill, where our bitterness is has basis. Oh,
okay,
my.
So you were going to talk about all politics being local,
all
and then we got sidetracked.
All politics being local,
yeah.
And so we have 3 seconds to do that. But so let's start about, we all remember the Zillion Woman March in January
mm-hmm.
on the 21st. We gave Donald a day to think that he was the king of the world, and then people took to the streets all over the world, not just in Washington,
mm-hmm.
And not just in Raleigh. Mm-hmm. I was at the march in Raleigh, that was just about one of the most soothing experiences I've ever had at a demonstration. I've been to a few, and this was extremely encouraging to me that maybe we could get through this because people really had made the connection. To me, I think one of the great legacies of this whole experience is going to be how people are engaging at their local level in understanding that there are things that we can put our hands on and take control of.
Yeah.
And I understand that in 2016, that in early in the year, that something like 800 women had contacted Emily's List to ask for assistance in running for office.
Mm-hmm.
The number as of now for the 2018 races is something like 10,000, I think.
Yeah.
And that is extremely encouraging to me. And these are not just national level races. These are state and local
races.
State
and local, yep.
And we're going to have a whole bunch of them. We're going to have a school board race in Orange County in the primary cycle. That's the election for school board because it's nonpartisan.
Yeah.
I hope that we see a bunch of candidates for that race. I think that will be a good sign that people are saying, hey, you know, I can run for this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's where a whole lot of the world is determined, is at school boards.
Yep.
So I hope that we'll see some activity on that, you know, better than what we've seen before. The last cycle wasn't very impressive for that. But we've had a contested mayor's race in Hillsborough for the first time in more than a decade. Wasn't that much of a race, but it was a race, and that's a good thing for Hillsborough.
Same in Carrboro, too. First time in 6 years or 8 years. 2009, I think, was the last contested race in Carrboro.
Right. Not in any way a negative reflection on Lydia for the mayor's race. I can't think of anyone who embraced that more than Lydia. Was happy to have the race.
Oh, yeah.
Happy to have people paying attention to it and fleshing out some issues. And
you've mentioned how civil the elections have been.
Yeah. And I mean, I think locally, you know, we had an individual running for town council who was elected and had some controversy about how some of her election went and what happened at the post office.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that for a minute, because you remember those details better than I do.
This is Hong Bin-gu here, right?
Correct.
Remind me again about the post office.
There were donations that were sent.
Oh,
to her campaign,
yeah.
Right?
So
that were sent to her PO box that were returned.
We never got the conclusion from that. I still think that was a clerical error at the post office. Or it was malicious, but we never actually got the conclusion of that. It was just some snafu where the PO box got closed and things got returned. And of course, it happens to a candidate right on the run-up to election day.
And there had been some cranking in letters to the editor or whatever.
And I think the more significant thing with Hong Bin-gu's candidacy is that there was the individual who posted on the Orange County local Facebook page sort of criticizing her for not being sufficiently American because she's got a name like Hong Bin-gu and she's Asian American. But that was one voice in the wilderness, as it turned out. And if you know anything about the Orange County local Facebook page, I think the people on Orange County local would agree with me on this. This is where conservatives who live in Orange County can go to be themselves.
Yes.
I'm
glad for that.
Yeah.
I'm glad they have that.
But that can go down some, like, they can speak their minds, and that can go down depending on the individual. We'll just say that whenever something gets posted, whenever a story gets posted that has to do with race, there are way more comments on that post than there ordinarily would be. So if someone gets on Orange County Local and posts, oh, I don't like Hong Bin-gu because she's Asian American, having seen the history of that page, you might think that there would at least be some people who would support the person saying that. There were not. This was one voice in the wilderness, and people who I have seen post some things on that page that I have looked at and been like, oh, God, why would anyone think that, jumped into this conversation to push her. Back against right. this guy and defend Hongbin Gu. And I thought that was terrific.
I love that.
Yeah.
I'm glad we want to remind everybody that that is Orange County.
Yeah.
And that's who we are now.
Yeah.
So with that uplifting note, we're going to take another break, and we're going to come right back talking with Aaron Keck here on the Weekend Water Cooler. You're listening to 97.9 The Hill. Back. You're listening to the Weekend Water Cooler. Gene Bolduc, your host here, talking with Aaron Keck. Winding down 2017. It's the end of the year, and we know it.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron?
Yes.
Aaron, talk to me some more.
Okay.
About whatever we were just talking about.
Our focus of the show today is that all politics is local.
Right.
And you mentioned towards the end of our last segment, the election of 2016 being what it was, one of the positive outcomes of it, or one of the positive sort of side effects of it, is that we're seeing this increasing engagement in local politics, people getting involved and getting engaged, not just on the national level, but on the local level.
Just to make this one quick point, that, by the way, apparently, it seems to me, has been sustained throughout the year. There's a lot of talk in January after the Women's March about, well, let's see if this is a moment or a movement. Well, I think it's definitely a movement.
It's a movement.
It's really,
and that was exactly the point that I was going to make, too, that we talked about the Women's March on January 21st. I wasn't able to be at that one. I was at HK on J, which happened less than a month later, which was easily the biggest or the second biggest, minus the first big Moral Monday march, which I know we'll talk about later on with Reverend Barber. But other than that one, this was easily the biggest turnout for an HK on J march. And then that engagement continues all the way down and through the year. It's intersectional. So at the HK on J march, which is the NAACP, this is a civil rights rally. This is primarily focusing typically on issues that are of particular relevance for African Americans. This particular year, and I know they try to be intersectional every year, this particular year, you had women with pussy hats on. You had signs all over the place supporting women, supporting refugees, supporting immigrants, supporting LGBT people, supporting low-income people, supporting African Americans, supporting Muslims, supporting just all of these different groups of people who are coming under fire, because it's not just about one group of people. It's about all of these groups of people, and all of those groups of people have to band together. And we get that.
It's that concept, finally, that, if it's some of us, it's all of us.
Yep. Absolutely. Right. And so there was
long overdue.
You mentioned the number of people that are getting involved in elections. That translated into a significant increase in voter turnout for a local election. Still low. You know, we look at 18-20% for a local election and we're disappointed in it. But let's look at the bright side. 20% is significantly higher voter turnout than we ordinarily see for a local election, even here in Chapel Hill Carborough, where people are engaged more than the average to begin with. And that translated into certain election results. We've been talking about kind of this pushback, or, you know, Chapel Hill voters in particular kind of moving in a new direction, and you're seeing that translating into incumbents having a harder time in the last couple of years. But the incumbency advantage in elections is really significant, especially on the local level. When you go to the polls and you see eight names, and the only ones you recognize are the ones who have been on city council for the last 4, 8, 12 years. So those are the ones that you vote for. So incumbents tend to win. Not this time. The incumbency advantage was nil or negative, and that has a little bit to do with the fact that you've got Chapel Hill voters kind of wanting to move in a new direction. That has a little bit to do with the fact that you've got Chapel Hill Alliance for a Livable Town endorsing for non-incumbents and really getting out the vote for them. So there was that as well. But Tom Jensen, again, a public policy polling, said this too, that when you have an increase in voter turnout, you've got people who are entering the local election for the first time. They're voting in a local election for the first time. So they don't know the difference between an incumbent and a non-incumbent. That incumbency advantage is gone. So newcomers, challengers do better than they ordinarily would. That's a sign of people right. getting engaged and active. And it was also a really good year for women on the local level. You right. have Barbara Fushi in Carrboro not just getting elected to the Board of Aldermen, but finishing first. In the school board race, you have Marianne Wolfe and Amy Fowler not mm-hmm. just getting elected to the school board, but finishing first and second.
Right.
James Barrett, who is an incumbent and fairly well-liked, knowledgeable, knows right. his stuff, very out there, public and active, finished fourth, and now he's going to have to run again in 2 years if he wants to hang on to his seat because the vote for the female candidates, Fowler and Wolf and Joel Hall Brown, they got more votes than he did. And the same thing happened in Chapel Hill. You've got the newcoming candidates. You've got I'm starting to blank on the names because I was going into I was on a roll and then I get to the
yeah because you got caffeine expired.
This is, if I can remember, Alan Boynsey, Karen Stengman, Hong Bingu, and Rachel Shavitz were the four winners. So
nice recovery
again. I think Boynsey did finish first or second in Chapel Hill, but still a really good year for female candidates
amazing.
In Chapel Hill too.
It's
with three of the four.
The incumbents lost. I just I can't get over it. I think that's amazing. Name recognition is usually very, very mm-hmm. important.
But what a great year it was for women in this community in elections.
And nationally, too. I mean, the races last month all across the country. I mean, when you look at this in a graphic mm-hmm. and you see the number of races where there's a whole bank of men who were running for re-election. Mm-hmm. And in state and local races. And they all got bounced by women, mm-hmm. all of them.
Yeah.
It's really astonishing. And
trans
this,
women in some cases
well, right.
as well
and
in
this,
Virginia.
And the political obvious rejection of certain agendas.
Mm-hmm.
Of a guy painting himself as the leading homophobe.
Virginia's homophobe, yeah.
Virginia's leading homophobe getting bounced by a trans woman. You know, this stuff you don't write in Hollywood scripts because Harvey Weinstein would reject it.
Hey-o.
Well, yeah. You know, anyway. No worries.
You're feeling
on that
a little
longer.
Bit bad about saying that, but I not
feel
that
only
bad.
A little, yeah. Only a little bit bad about mm-hmm. it. Well, so. So, yeah, there's been, you know, talk about pendulums. I mean, I think that the messages have been quite clear.
Mm-hmm.
There are probably some men in Congress right now that are thinking about a sex change just so they can keep their jobs. Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah.
I guess that really would be something. Yeah, who are some of them?
Are we talking about a couple of guys in particular here?
Well, no, I'm just thinking that this is it reminds me of this golf joke about, you know, the foursome that these guys have been playing every weekend for years and years, and one weekend Charlie isn't there. And they say, well, you know, so he'll be back next week. He's having some surgery, and then he comes back, and he's Charlene.
Right.
And he says, well, you know, it's a painful procedure, but it's worth it. And he walks up to the ladies' tee and tees off so he can have an advantage over his friends.
It's good.
It's all about advantage, Aaron,
yeah,
as
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
As you know entirely too
you
well.
You women have it so
we
easy
have it
in
so
America
easy.
These
well,
days.
Listen, I do play golf. And listen, when I play golf, most of the time I play with my husband mm-hmm. and his friends.
Yes.
And as I improved, and as you would guess, started beating them,
uh-huh.
then I started hearing the crying and the moaning that I get this big advantage. And I said, look, I'll tell you what. you guys cut your salaries 20%, give me the money, and I'll hit from the white tees.
There you go.
That was the end of the argument.
That's good.
So that was I thought that was an elegant solution to an obvious problem.
You did also have the opportunity of going back to the guys' tees, beating them anyway,
and lording that
over them for the rest of everyone's natural lives.
Yeah, but I can lord it over them anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm a woman. I get to do that. Come on. I realize you wouldn't necessarily know this, Aaron, but this is one of the things that we're good at.
Yeah, so, you know.
Anyway, so you're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler, thank goodness. And we're going to be back in just a moment with more. You're listening to 97.9 The Hill. And we're back with our closing moments with Dr. Aaron Keck here on The Water Cooler. And we're talking about the end of the year, and we know it. And, you know, probably one of the biggest stories of this year and happenings of this year has been the topic of race as it has presented itself to us through controversies over Confederate monuments, tiki torches. We go from the Women's March almost universally uplifting and, as far as I know, worldwide, nonviolent, to tiki torch marches in Charlottesville that resulted in an innocent person being killed and
three
people being killed
because of the two police officers.
I don't think that they were
the protester and the
and we have. Also, at the same time, I think it's probably fair to say, as something of a reaction to the groundswell of demand for leadership in this area, we have Reverend Barber taking his Moral Mondays movement and taking it national and stepping away from
Moral Revival. They're calling
the
it
Moral
now.
Revival, and you know. This is just going to be absolutely fascinating to watch because this guy is so capable from a leadership perspective, so articulate in his message, and he is such a great counterweight to the thug who's in the White House. So, how is that going to manifest? Is his movement going to endorse candidates?
I have no idea if he even knows the answer to that question. I really don't. But I'm looking forward to seeing what exactly shape this is going to take and how significant it's going to be in like the field of public discourse. Like, is this really going to catch on as a thing, or is this going to be just something simmering in the background? I think it's terrific. I think it's exactly the right idea. I think like a couple of things that I've sort of been noticing in the last few years is that you'll hear conservatives still to this day talking about the left and progressives as being immoral or amoral or relativistic.
Right.
And that's conservatives still stuck in the 80s and 90s where relativism actually was kind of rising to prominence among the left. But that's no longer the case.
The
people who are embracing relativism and postmodernism now are actually people on the right saying, well, who knows what really is truth and what really is not with regard to climate change and things like that.
Right.
And people on the left are the ones who I think are really taking the ball and should be. And I'm surprised to hear myself saying this because 15, 20 years ago, I was in that same boat too. So I would never have thought I'd be sitting here today saying this. But the fact that people on the left are picking up the ball of morality and running with it and taking that lead, I think is terrific because I think that what this country needs is a moral revival and not the sort of morality that has passed for morality in the past, which is judgmentalism and, oh, you're attracted to the wrong people, therefore you're going to hell. No, right. Actual morality in terms of what you do to the least of these you do to me, in terms right. of kindness, in terms of empathy, in terms of just the general sense of being good and kind to each other and helping each other and right. seeing each other as – I'm going to be Kantian for a second – ends rather than means.
Exactly.
Like other people are ends in themselves rather than some stepping stone that you can use to get something for yourself.
Yeah, and
like
not,
we're all in it together.
You know, not gutting these systems and programs that support families in need of support and saying, well, you know, what was this quote from Orrin Hatch the other day talking about? He had trouble supporting the CHIP program.
Oh, the Children's Health Insurance Program.
The Children's Health Insurance
People need to pull themselves up by their own bootstraps.
Because he has
yeah.
trouble spending billions and billions of dollars to help people who just refuse to help themselves.
So
you know, those slacker three-year-olds, I just
bad
can't
hearing
imagine.
That. So I still like Orrin Hatch as a Republican, and the reason I do is that I read And the Band Played On a few years ago, and Orrin Hatch is the surprise hero of that book because he saw AIDS as a public health crisis
right.
before any of his fellow Republicans did, and he actually was doing the right thing.
I'm glad he had a good moment.
So I don't hate Orrin Hatch, but I don't understand why he said what he said. So and also prior to passing legislation and getting the government involved in doing the right thing, we as individuals need to be doing the right thing as well.
Exactly right. And that's the name of the game right mm-hmm. there. That's in 2018 is going to be the year of it's up to you, America.
Yeah.
Don't be looking to one or two people at the head of the government
yep.
to
– as 2017
right.
was, which is
exactly
why
right.
tens and hundreds and millions – thousands and millions of people were out right. on the streets
we're
marching
the
and getting involved in politics
with
and voting.
Signs and saying, yeah, I object.
Let's keep that going.
That's
going
to be – the next year is going to be the year of I object.
Someone – and I teach American government at Durham Tech. The day after the election in 2016,
right.
we were talking and my students all being progressives – because it's Durham Tech.
Yeah.
We're in this community. We're all just super despondent. And at the end of class, I said, and I'll say this a million times before I die, the president is not the country.
That's right.
We are the country.
That's
whatever
right.
we want the country to be, whatever values we want it to espouse and uphold, whatever we want other people to look at us and see, we need to get out there and
That's
do it
right.
ourselves and not wait for someone else to do it. And we have to do it even more if the people in charge with big microphones and a lot of power are betraying that
and
duty.
Bad hair.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what we're going to do. We have our orders and we're going to come right back here at the Weekend Water Cooler next weekend. We hope you'll join us. Thank you, Aaron Keck, for
Thank
being
you.
With us today. See you next weekend, kids.
Follow Gene on Twitter at Gene Bolduc and tweet your comments and questions with the hashtag WCHL.